Good evening. I'll call to order a special meeting of the Unalaska City Council, and it's called to order at 6 p.m. Monday, January 24th, 2022. City Clerk, have a roll call, please.
Certainly, sir. Mr. Bell?
Here.
Ms. Coleman?
Here.
Ms. Looby?
Here.
Mr. Nicholson?
Here.
Mr. Robinson?
Present.
Mr. Tungle?
Here.
And Mr. Tudikoff?
Here. We do have a quorum. This time, I'll ask Councilman Looby to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you, Councilman Looby. This time, I'd like to introduce, we've got a couple of guests in our filled-up meeting hall here. Welcome to the meeting. First, Stephanie Moreland from Trident Seafoods, and the other is Jared Brand from Trident Seafoods. Welcome. May I have a motion and a second to adopt the agenda, please?
I make a motion to adopt the agenda.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Nicholson, seconded by Councilman Robinson. There are no objection. The agenda is adopted. We have a motion and a second to go into a work session.
Move to go into a work session.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Robinson, seconded by Councilman Nicholson. Is that right?
No.
There being no objection, we are in a work session. Was that Tungle?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. Change that. Seconded by Councilman Tungle. You got to wave. I forget you're down there.
This time I throw something at
it. Yeah. Well, thanks. Okay, I'll turn it over to the city manager and we'll move on.
Yes, Mayor and Council, we have two items before you tonight in the work session. The first one is the discussion of the proposed council goals for budget FY23. Every year, Council approves the Council budget goals. This will be accomplished at the February 8th Council meeting. In advance of that meeting, we wanted to bring you these goals for you just in case you all wanted to make any changes. The draft goals are in your packet and should be on the screen here shortly. We do not have a formal presentation for you this evening, as all the goals have remained fairly consistent over the past several years, and that to date there really has been no direction to change any of those goals. Staff is certainly happy to take direction from you all this evening if there's council consensus for changes to be made to any of these goals, and we would then make those changes before bringing them to you at that February 8th meeting. So if you're good with these goals, we will proceed accordingly. And Jim is on the phone, and we are available to answer questions that you might have.
Okay.
That's all I have for that.
Who's leading off this? Jim?
Well, so these, just your first item are just the budget goals. So if you all, and these are council's goals, so if you want to see any changes, let me know to what's in your packet. Let me know. If you do not want to see any changes, let me know, and we'll, either way, we'll proceed.
We'll start off. I'll have Councilman Robinson, then I'll go down the line for any comments.
All right, thank you. One of the things is personnel. I know that we've adopted a principle of basically reducing per department. One department that concerns me, and it's the department that keeps us out of jail, is our clerk's department, and the training money that is used there. I think we need to be very careful and pick and choose what departments are going to have to cut and and especially in personnel. And we have the unfortunate event that Mr. Winters is retired, and therefore Roxana is gone. And we are stuck, you know, we're faced, we need to train clerks, you know, to do that. And I think, you know, I think that problem exists citywide. So in personnel that are running and basically as they retire, you bring in new personnel, there's going to be a certain amount of training to be taking place. I don't think those are areas we need to be cutting. I think those are areas that that we need to look at to bolster the continuity of the city, you know, employees. So that's just a comment on what I've seen here, and I know that's not in here, but that is something that is been on my mind, because we have a number of city employees that have reached that entire retirement age, and you know, to be able to, you know, keep things flowing in a good direction, hopefully by hiring local, that they will be able to train the individuals to step into those positions in the event they are vacated. So thank you, that's all I have.
Okay, thank you, Councilman Robinson. Councilman Coleman.
Thank you. I guess I was looking at inflation rates and where we're going, and it's looking like, because I know you have the 3%, obviously we have staffing, you know, with our collective bargaining agreements, that's a natural increase, but also you accounted for the 3% because of inflation. I do want to, right, the inflation rate, the cost of living, these things, the inflation rate, is it what you were referring to on that this increase, or did I have that, read that wrong, first off, because I'm getting...
I am, nowhere in the budget goals does it specifically say inflation. The budget, I referred, Jim and I referred to inflation in the memo, because we believe that that's really what that 3% is referring to. So I think what you're speaking to then is the operating, under the operating expenses goals, where it talks about that the proposed general fund budget shall not increase more than 3% for non-personnel expenditures.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, that goal.
Yes, thank you. So obviously that inflation, I can see that being a real factor coming up in this next year. However, right. I do want to just expand on that in saying that it is not a reason to expand operations. This is to account for inflation, and not because you've got your 3%, you can expand operations within the budget. So that's my little concern, and hoping that I think that most departments did an excellent job last year in being able to find ways to cut and stay well outside of that 3%. So I just, you know, accounting for inflation, a cost of doing business is I'd like to stay within that for sure. So thank you. That's just my comment.
Okay, thank you, Councilman Coleman. Councilman Tungle?
I'm good. I think what they did last year, they did a lot of cuts on a lot of department last year, and I think continuing this year, I think it's the goal that we set up is in line with this year, so I'll be good with what they have. Thank you.
Great, thank you, Councilman Tungle. Councilman Luby.
Yeah, I think that they all look pretty good. I kind of agree there with Dennis about staffing training, and I think that there's been a lot of retirements in the roads department, which I think that, you know, there's some training that probably needs to happen there with graders and things like that for for the new staff out there that are moving up. But other than that, I think that the goals look good. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Councilman Luby. Councilman Nicholson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I will agree with everything that we have down here. Everything looks good. But, you know, as far as staffing, that is something that for the graders and for the roads, it would be nice to make sure on Captain's Bay Road over the past 2 weeks, the road hasn't really been graded, and that, you know, I'd like to make sure that we have the funds to make sure that we constantly keep that up to snuff, especially during the seasons. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Councilman Nicholson. Councilman Bell?
I think we're noticing the theme here, talking a lot about personnel and what we see going forward. Just kind of some thoughts here and some bigger picture. We have some of these people, we do have some people that are retiring, so we are going to have some turnover, and I think we're probably going to see some turnover anyways over the next few years. You know, the concept of trying to promote people from this community or hire people from this community, even if it requires a little more training on the front end, it is a good way to go. You know, I was looking through this, and last year we had some conversations about adding some personnel, and the only one that I thought that was probably really necessary was the admin for the fire department. But as we look at hiring and going forward, you know, the thought crossed my mind that, you know, we have had a hard time finding a finance director. And I think that's going to be one of those kind of things where we're probably going to end up paying more money for that position. We've got some of these other contracts that are going to be coming up, and I think there are probably going to be some additional monies going out there. I just see that it's going to be difficult to stay within this budget over the next few years, because I personally believe that the city is probably a little bit understaffed as it is, and there's a lot of people doing, you know, good work and doing work in multiple areas. As we move forward with budgets and goals and all this stuff, you know, personnel is going to be a big one in the back of my mind. So, thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Bell. I think I got everybody, right? Any second rounds before I make comments? Well, I tend to agree with the staffing issue. You know, we have a lot of people. I don't know what that is, but I'd sure be interested to know in the next year who's retiring and how many and what departments. That, I think, is the key to, getting ahead of the game here and bringing on these people at a training level, and if we're going to hire as much as we can locally. Some of these positions may not be filled by that kind of strategy, but at least we ought to give it a shot. The the training for the police department, the fire department, is whatever that is. If we lose a couple of key personnel, we're going to be paying quite a bit to get somebody here out of town to fill this, to be qualified, to keep our insurance rates down, keep our adjustments rates down. So, you know, we have to be mindful of that. The other one was, what was it? The power plant. We are moving forward, and we have a PPA with OCCP. I would prefer that as we start looking for a manager for the power plant or utility distribution system, that we get somebody who has some knowledge of geothermal and installation and plugging in. That would sure save the city a lot of time and effort and money, and it will go a lot smoother as we go down the road. We've got a couple more years, but it's time to start thinking about it, whoever we hire. I know that Mr. Thompson has some background in geothermal, and that's good to know. But some of the points and with activities that we saw over this last year and a half, concern me a little bit about going out of protocol and writing letters to people that shouldn't be written to unless it's gone through the city manager. So those kind of things tend to get spread around, and we need to be very careful of the kind of people we hire down into the future. Other than that, the goals look very good for the FY 2023, and we keep it under within budget of that, what was it, 10-12% that was mentioned in the financial implications, then we'll be okay. I know we can draw from general fund on some of these things, but we are looking at a revenue shortage in 2023-2024, possibly, with the fishing industry. So we've got to continue to be mindful to keep our belts tight and make sure we keep our community safe at the same time. That's all I had. Any other comments? None?
All right, so I am hearing make no changes to the goals that are before you this evening, and these are what we will bring forward for you to formally adopt at the next meeting. I'm also hearing that there's obviously concern. I share these concerns with you for staffing. The City of Onalaska is no different from any other organization that you hear about, folks retiring, and it's harder to get people to come on board. The last I checked, it looks like our turnover rate at this point is equaling already to, the fiscal year to what it was previously last year, which is about 20%. So that's a pretty significant turnover. We do have collective bargaining agreements for all of the 3302 individual bargaining units coming up this year. We're also going to be needing to take a look at Title III employees this year, so there'll be some things for you all to chew on. But again, it's about recruiting the right folks and taking care of our folks. I appreciate your feedback on the training. I have long believed that training is really investing in our employees and isn't necessarily just a cost. I mean, that's a real investment in our folks and our organization to make sure that we can provide the best quality service possible. So I definitely appreciate all of your feedback. Thank you.
Thank you, Aaron. I know a lot of other private companies are going through the same thing, we're being affected as a community, and I'm hoping that we at the city can jump ahead and be ahead of the slide, so to speak. Thanks. Okay, we're done with the discussion on council goals, and now go to item B on work session, item 5, discuss and review the FY23 revenue projections. This is the one that's we're looking for. Turn it over to city manager.
This is the real reason why we're here tonight. All right. So as Jim's memo says, we are really working hard to sharpen our pencils as we look at our budgeted expenditures. We are doing the same as we look at our revenue projections. Staff and our consultants, which include our fisheries consultant and the city's assessor, we have been collaborating quite closely over the last few months on these projections and are confident in the results. Jim has authored, again, that informational memo, which is in your packet, but tonight we'll review this PowerPoint with you. We had hoped to have Jim here in person, but decided against that due to COVID. So Jim will pause periodically throughout this presentation to allow time for questions and discussions as needed. Frank, our fisheries consultant here, should be also be on the line and is available to address questions as well. But I will say that Frank and Jim worked very closely throughout this entire process to get this to you today. With that, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Jim.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and Council. I appreciate the opportunity to come before you tonight and go through a little bit more explanation on the work that we put together for you tonight. So first of all, I'm going through PowerPoint, but I did send along a memo and some additional graphs and tables for you to look at. And I really am hoping that you've had a chance to look through that memo, because there's a lot of detail in there that I'll probably not discuss tonight. This is probably a little bit more of a high-level discussion, but I certainly do entertain any questions that you may have as we go through this. So with that, I'll go ahead and begin. So Margie, next slide, please. So the purpose of the general fund revenue projections is really just, we want to check and make sure everything is, you know, we're sustaining the revenues and hopefully see a little bit of an upward trend. And we want to compare, you know, take some time and compare that budget to actual. And if you do remember, we really began in earnest some discussion regarding fiscal sustainability back in December of 2019. And while a major focus has been on the establishment of the permanent fund that we're going through, setting aside some money for the rainy day fund or emergency operations. Going through this budget process is also key element to that process. Okay, so Margie, next slide. I'm going to start off with just some general comments. Overview of the general fund revenue in total. And I'm starting off with some historical information. And you'll see in here that I'm breaking things out a little bit in terms of, I wanted to look at it both when we included our investment gains or investment activity versus excluding that. And I'll get to that here in just a moment. But if you look at it historically for the last 10 years, our budgeted revenue has exceeded the budget seven times. And the only years that we didn't were 2015, 16, and 18. And primarily due to the fluctuations in the resource landing tax that we receive from the state. with respect to the investments, I comment here about it simply because it is so volatile. We really are at the whim of, you know, the political environment, the social economic environment, just around, not just around the country, but around the world. And what I noticed is if you look at 2019 and 2020 and you look at our investment activity, you'll see that we did really well. And in other years, we haven't done quite so well. So, Margie, if you could go to the next slide, there's a visual that shows that. Very straightforward. If you look at FY19 and FY20 in that top graph, you see a huge gap between what we received and what we had budgeted. And it really, in some respects, it provides a bit of a misleading representation as to how well or you know, how we did, really. And the bottom graph, where you take those investments out, it doesn't necessarily make it too much more smooth, but it does, those latter years, you can see the drop and in terms of the gap between the budgets to actual piece. Next slide, Margie. Prior to getting into a lot of the detail, I wanted to list out for you really what our numbers are. And You can see the dollar amounts here. Some of these represent an increase, some a decrease, and we'll go through those in greater detail as we go through this tonight. The last two items on the list, the investment income and the everything else bucket, I guess for lack of a better term, I don't plan on spending any time on those tonight, primarily because those other six make up such a significant portion of our revenue projections. And Margie, if you can go to the next slide, please. And for those of you that like the visual side of this, and I tend to be one of those, you can see in a pie graph how our budget is broken up in terms of, you know, which slice of the pie is how much. And I'll pause there for any questions.
Yes, thank you.
Councilman Robinson had a question.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Sharp. One thing that concerns me is the increase in property values. Why is it like the industrial almost a 94% increase in value over previous years? What is driving that value? Is it the sales of property that are taken into account? Or what is it?
Excuse me. I do touch on that a little bit. There is a little bit more in the PowerPoint presentation, specifically as it relates to the real estate, the real property taxes. And we did trade emails with our assessor. He provided some additional information. And the majority of the increases were related to getting properties to market value, which is required by the state. And there tends to be gaps between sales. And so when a comparable sale pops up, it may be a year or two after the last one, which then requires a large adjustment to make up for that gap. In theory, they would be doing that every year if there were sales, but when there aren't, they have to do a big catch-up, and that's what you're seeing a bit of this year.
Yeah, thank you. That's all I've had on this portion.
Councilman Luby has a question.
Yeah, it's not so much a question as it is more of a comment. And it goes to the real property taxes as well. And with the assessment values increasing to such an extent, it seems to me that maybe, you know, it's going to increase our revenue, of course, but do we need that revenue as much and at the expense of all of our property owners? Possibly we might look at maybe even reducing the mill rate maybe a little bit to offset some of these higher costs to our community members. Because it's getting outrageous, you know, just the cost of living here. And I see people leaving constantly. Every time I turn around, somebody new is leaving town because they just can't afford to live here anymore. And so that was kind of something that I was possibly looking at, is maybe if we could adjust the mill rate to help compensate some of those higher costs on the assessment for real property tax for people. But something to maybe look at. Thank you.
So on that note, I have a couple of things. I will say that throughout this presentation, right, if you go forward a couple of slides, Jim is going to walk you through each of these major revenue sources, and we can get into a more in-depth conversation about each one of those, including property tax. So I would suggest, if we want to have targeted conversations about any of those revenue sources, that we hold off until we get to those couple of slides. I will say, to your question about the mill rate, is considered by council every year. I would also caution you to adjust that based on the budget goals that you've just discussed. You're giving staff the kind of, you know, the marching orders to really prepare budgets that are, you know, matching what we're bringing in for general fund revenues. And fingers crossed, we're going to be able to do that. But if we reduce those revenues, that's going to be even trickier for us to accomplish and try to meet the rest of the goals that you all have set forward. So that's my two cents for there. But so Jim, or I guess Mr. Mayor, would you like for Jim to continue? Okay, Jim, go ahead.
Thank you. I got a drink of water, so hopefully it won't see me coughing so much. all right, next slide, Margie. So this is, as Aaron was just saying, I am going to go through each of what I look at as the six major revenue sources for the city: real and personal property tax, sales tax, and then the three fish taxes. And I added these other couple bullets at the bottom really to kind of give you a little bit more insight as to why I selected these six. If you look at these, you know, over the last 10 years, these six categories have comprised 83% of our general fund revenues. And if you look on a go-forward basis for what you see before you tonight, those six categories are going to account for almost 90% of our general fund revenues. Okay, Margie, next slide, please. All right, so now we get on to the real property tax revenue amount. As you saw, we're projecting a budget of $6 million. And this is based on the increases that we saw from the assessed values for properties. And a large portion of that increase, based on the information that we have, is on the industrial side or the commercial side. The residential side, while they do have an increase, it's around 10 to 12%, but not insignificant, but not nearly as much as what we're seeing on the others. And when you look at this, it's about a 25% increase in the tax. Next slide, Margie. I'll pause here. I put this graph in just to show you how we've done historically. And you can certainly see, to Councilman Robinson's comment about the increased taxes on the real property side, that certainly has been an upward and to the right movement over the last 10 years. And I think that certainly in other parts of the United States, the property values have increased quite a bit too. But you know, now you can see it here in Alaska as well. But my other point is, you know, budget-wise, we've been pretty close to the revenues, actually been pretty close to the budget side. So I will pause there and see if there's any questions.
Councilman Robinson.
Again, a question on the industrial rates. Is that primarily due to the value of the property or the value of buildings? Or do you know that?
It's primarily due to the value of land, regardless of whether the land is vacant or whether a building sits on it.
Great, thank you.
Anyone else? Councilman Bell?
Sure, I'll throw some comments in here. And mine goes along with a lot of what's already been said as far as the real property tax. And when we look at this graph, I mean, that should be a red flag right off the bat to say, hey, maybe we need to take another look at this and how it was assessed, or is there a flaw in the way we do this or in the system that would create a 90% increase in industrial rates, a 48% increase in land value, a 13% increase in residential. That should be a red flag to say, hey, there's something broken here.
I will say, this is Erin, a couple of things. The assessor has provided a draft report. I'm going to look over at Madam Clerk. A draft report to us that I'm going to be reviewing with the clerk here shortly and likely be providing that to you all for informational purposes, and that provides a little bit of the background that you guys might be looking for at this point. I will say that part of the struggle, I am not an assessor by any stretch of the imagination, but part of a struggle in Alaska with assessing properties is that, unlike other states, where there is a requirement to publicly post all of the sales prices, which makes it a little bit more easy for assessors to readily compare the sales prices to make sure that they're kind of lining up with the property assessments. In the state of Alaska, that's not required, you know. So I think what the information and feedback that we were getting from our state, from our assessor this year, was that there were more property sales, so there was more information this time that they were aware of. So then there was more information this time to make appropriate adjustments to make sure that the property assessed value was in keeping with the actual market rate. So I think that's more information, more accurate numbers, and that I think then you're seeing the increase. But so I think that's a little bit of the background. So I mean, when I hear something's broken, I think it's because the information has been lacking for years, and now some additional information is being provided to that assessor. That being said, we'll still share that report with you all, and perhaps in the future. I think this, yeah, go ahead, Margie.
Can I comment, please? So under state code, our assessor is required by law to assess our real property at 100% of market value, 100%. The sales ratio study that they conducted based on last year's assessment showed we were only at 86%. That means that our real property was valued below, 14% below that 100% goal. So therefore, that says that our assessment was too low overall. Also, as Aaron and Jim have both mentioned, we've had some recent commercial land sales to serve as comparables where we didn't have those in the past. So that allowed them to make those comparables and raise the assessed value to market levels on various level commercial land. Also, they did a reevaluation of tank farms and docks, and so that was included. And, you know, other things that affect our market values would be, you know, supply and demand. We all know that there's a housing shortage here. And also a limited availability of vacant land. So that the supply and demand element comes into it as well. And finally, construction costs. The value of those, of the improvements have also increased. So those are a few more of the elements that the assessor has told me about, and that you'll see more information about that in the report we supplied. So, and I would agree with Aaron that the system's not broken, but we now have, this year, they had more information on which to base their work.
Councilman Bell?
Yeah, I had one more comment in here, and we're going to get to this, but I'm going to ask ahead of time. Is a 27% increase in the projection, or what we're looking at as far as sales tax revenue, and we can touch on that a little bit more, how you came to that number, but in light of the economic climate that's going on, 27% seems like a pretty large increase in sales tax revenue or projection. So, thank you.
Yeah, I won't comment on that right now, but we'll get to that when we get to that spot in the presentation. All right, Jim, I'm getting the nod from the mayor. Proceed. I'm supposed to be Jim's eyes for this meeting.
Margie, next slide, please. The personal property tax, you'll see here that there is no budgeted change from FY22. And this is really simply because we don't have the information yet for which to determine what to budget. We won't have that information until the first part of March or middle of March. And rather than try to make something up or put something in front of you that shows some sort of an increase or a change, I thought it would be more appropriate to leave it flat for now and then report back once we have that information. And Margie, next slide. And again, I've just included a graph here so that you can see the historical progression of the personal property tax budgets to actual. And again, you can see that this one is increasing too, but it's not unlike what we've seen in other areas. So again, I'll pause here and see what questions or comments folks may have.
Any questions? I notice on the graph, it goes up 4 years in 2012 budget and actual both, and then it levels off for 4 years and then goes up again for 2 years. And if in 2019 or 2009 was the last time we raised the mill rate, be interesting to see where that's at, because the mill rate question was asked about lowering it there at some point. How is that going to affect the 2023 rates? I guess you'll have that information later on in March. I'm not asking it for it right now, but it would be interesting to note. Thanks.
So, Mr. Mayor.
That's noted.
Okay, thank you. Jim's got it. We're good.
Jim, is it okay to proceed?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, thank you.
Perfect. Thank you. Appreciate this, Margie. So just a general overview of sales tax, 3%. You know, it's divided out between the general fund and the 1% sales tax fund. Historically, general fund revenue. And what you will see when we get to the graph is there's a general downward trend in the last 10 years. And then in going through this particular process, this was probably one of the more challenging aspects to try and come up with a budget amount. And I recall probably 2 years ago when we were putting together the fiscal year 20 budget, I was digging for information on how the city had projected that in prior years. And the model that was used included establishing a correlation between the price of Alaska North Slope crude and the amount of sales tax that the city collected. And when I went through this process for the 2020 budget, that model really broke down. Something had gone sideways in the previous two fiscal years, and it really lended that particular model to be not reliable. So we went different routes. And so this year I revisited that, and with the goal of really taking three separate approaches. I wanted to use the model as it had been used previously, which takes information from the state of Alaska fall revenue book, and within that is the average price for the prior fiscal year of Alaska North Slope crude. And then you compare that, you develop a correlation between that and the amount of sales tax that's collected by the city. That was one of the models, but I was looking through the revenue book, and I noticed that they also project for the next 10 years what that price of crude oil is going to be. And so I tried a model where if I were to project the FY23 revenue, I would take the FY21 book, and then it would project it out a year. And that's how I would use it. And I established a correlation that way. And then the other item that I wanted to look at was knowing that the the fishing industry is such a strong, I mean, it really drives the economy in Alaska. I thought I would pull in to see if there was any correlation between the fish local landing tax that we collect and the amount of sales tax that we collect. And what I came up with was, first of all, I was able to eliminate the fish tax to sales tax. There was really no correlation between those two amounts. But what I did notice was the price of crude, there was a strong correlation regardless of which method I chose. And I ended up choosing one of the higher correlation, which essentially I take the one-year projection, compare it to what we received in that year, and then it gave me a really high correlation as to what those values might be. And I know this is somewhat technical, and I apologize for that. But I took that information, and then just using some sort of a factor that you calculate, dividing the amount of sales tax we collected by the price of a barrel of North Slope crude, developed a factor, multiplied that by what they projected the price to be for fiscal year 23, and that's where I came up with the $7.6 million. And going through this too, and some of this makes a little bit more sense. You know, if you look at where we are today for fiscal year 22, and when I say today, I'm thinking specifically as of December 31st. So halfway through the year, we're already at 75% of our budget. So while it may appear as though it's a substantial increase in our budget amount, it's not that significant considering where we are, what the actual amounts have been for the first 6 months of the fiscal year. And so through all of that, we came up with $7.6 million or $7,650,000 as our budget amount for fiscal year 2023. And to be clear, this is the general fund portion. If you divide that in half, that amount will then be for the 1% sales tax fund. Margie, next slide. Here is just a chart showing the budget actual. Again, I thought it might be helpful to see some historical information to see how we have performed over the last 10 years. And you can see that in this particular revenue source, our actual has exceeded our budget in each year. So that's a good sign, and I should probably knock on some wood somewhere. But that's where we've done for the last 10 years. And Margie, next slide. This last slide here under the sales tax is really, I found this fascinating a bit in the sense we know that the fishing industry has a strong influence just in general within the community. And so I looked at how much sales tax the city has collected from fuel distributors in Alaska. What percentage of that makes up the total? And you can see that if you go back to fiscal year 2014, in 2015, the fuel vendors were providing more than 50%. And I apologize, I don't have any information. I would have liked to have gone back to 2012. I just didn't have that amount of information. But you can see starting in 2016 and through now that it's become just the opposite. There's less reliance on the fuel vendors and a greater reliance on other types of businesses throughout the community to contribute to sales tax. And I say that I'm not being naive in the sense that we're less reliant on the fishing industry, because we're not. I mean, we're just as reliant on the fishing industry as before, but you can see that there are other types of the other sources of tax rather than just from the fuel sales. And so I'll pause here again for any questions or comments.
Councilman Luby.
Yeah, after reading through the packet on this, it really did look like you did a pretty good analysis with different scenarios to come up with the calculations for the sales tax, and I don't think that 27% is really out of line for the increase when you consider the cost of fuel and how much it has increased here lately. And I don't see it going down very much either. So, I do feel like that you did a pretty good job with it. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. Councilman Robinson?
Yes, that's a comment. We're seeing higher sales tax because of the higher fuel costs. We're also seeing higher sales tax in other city vendors due to the costs of like groceries increasing almost 25%. And we're going to see that increase even more. So labor rates that are increasing, that's why we're seeing a higher sales tax. The correlation with the cost of living here is going through the roof. So
somewhere in there is fuel. Councilman, go ahead, Tom.
Thank you. When we're using the correlation of North Slope crude in the calculations, do you notice any lag between where the prices change and how we're calculating the sales tax? I'm not sure if that's the right question, but a lag in the difference in the change of prices.
I'll see if I can understand your question here. So when I looked at it, what I would look at was, so first I look at the historical. So in other words, I would compare the fiscal year 21 price and look at the sales tax. But I also looked at, when I started digging in a little bit more, I wanted to see how well they projected. In other words, if they projected a barrel of oil to be $71 for a particular year, I looked at the next year to see what it actually was. And quite frankly, there were a few years where they missed the boat, sometimes short, sometimes long. And it's difficult to know which way we're going to go on this. I can see that we're doing really well this year, so I suspect there is a fuel cost element to it. So there is that. And then in terms of developing my factor, because there was so much up and down in that, I took the 10-year average and multiplied that by what the barrel of fuel was supposed to be for fiscal year 23. And that's how I came up with the projected amount. And then I discounted a little bit. I try to be somewhat conservative as I'm going through this, because I fully understand that while there's a correlation here and we run the math and Excel's our friend when we're doing this, correlation in it of itself does not indicate cause and effect. In other words, just because the price of fuel goes up or it changes and there's a high correlation doesn't mean that one affects the other. But I think in this case, history says that there is some of that. And also because we know how our area, how Unalaska operates in the reliance on the fishing industry and their reliance on fuel sales. I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, it does. And then I was looking at the chart here the previous one to what's showing where we were looking at, off a little bit here. Sales tax budget versus the actual, and since I believe we've been using the same type of calculations over the last so many years, we notice that the actuals are pretty linear throughout the years, but our budgeting has been up and down a little bit, except for a couple of years where we were really close, and if that's what accounts for that and the accuracy that we can expect.
Mr. Mayor, if I could, because I think this is getting at what Councilmember Bell might be thinking too, but I also wanted to just acknowledge that the last couple of years, we've had this thing called COVID, and which I know is surprising to everyone here, but there was some unpredictability when we were facing the budget cycles during those times. So if you recall, we did kind of decrease some of those revenues for the sales tax because we didn't know what that impact was going to be. So I think we're almost talking about two things here. You know, one is, you know, the methodology in which we're using right now to, and we have used in years past, to develop what this projected sales tax revenue is. But then also we're having this discussion of that percent increase. And I just want everybody just to kind of acknowledge the fact that that percent increase is kind of from a reduced projection because we didn't know how this was going to hit us. So I just wanted to kind of bring that forward. And perhaps, Jim, you can add on a couple of things from your perspective of what went into the last couple of years, because on slide 13, there really is quite that dip. Perhaps you can share some of your perspective on that.
Well, I think you really hit it on the head. One, the model broke down when I was trying to put this together. So I was left a little bit, didn't have the wind in my sail, so to speak, when I was doing this. I didn't have a lot to drive it. And then we knew that there was going to be an impact just to the local economy with respect to COVID, but we had no idea what it was. And I know that the city manager and I, we talked about this quite a bit in trying to determine what that right amount was. And I don't know what we, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is we didn't really have a real strong forecasting method. We just knew that there was going to be an impact. And so we went with that. Fortunately, in that sense, it worked out and we've actually done much better. But we just had no idea what the impact of COVID was going to be.
Okay, thank you, Jim. Councilman Coleman has a question, comment.
Thank you. In reflection, I think you guys that very well is you trying to compare something that was extremely unusual to something we had hoping to be back to usual. So when you reflect on the last 2 years, I kind of really have a hard time. I can't put those together because they really don't. They don't correlate because these scenarios are different. And it makes it unfortunate because that's what you do. You in your projections, you look at last year's trends and where do you go for forward. So I think not only did the last 2 years be particularly challenging, I think this one's going to be kind of obtuse also. But I'm going to go back to where, since we're on sales tax, and I always, a lot of this, I look at fuel again because that's a big driver, a single large driver. So. I look quickly back in the financials that you presented in the last council, and our sales were well above, like you said, 74%, and we're only, half the way through. So my comment or my question is, okay, we had a Bristol Bay closure, so no boats fishing, so no fuel sales, so I don't know. So that was November. That was October fishery. How much of that has played into the budget as we're at now? So bear with me here. But so we're going now into an A season with limited opies, no bear day, and pollock being lowered. So obviously that trend. It definitely Bristol Bay. I'm not expecting Bristol Bay again for another year. For sure. So as you're projecting fuels or sales to go up, I guess I'm pretty skeptic of that. And just based off fuel and based off past performance. I mean, so if you're looking at last year's, I'm just wondering how much you're predicting no fisheries and therefore limited fuel sales going into the next year. Does that make any sense to you? Because I just, it's great that we did better than expected so far for this year, but I'm trying to look at this cycle that's going through in our fisheries and trying to throw a target at that. And I just feel like this projection is a little too optimistic, in my opinion.
So if I were to try to summarize what you just said, is the question, well, I hear you, is it, but so then is the question, does the question become, how do the closures in the fisheries impact fuel sales, impact sales tax projections, right? I mean, that's kind of the flow of your kind of logic flow there.
Yeah, because yeah. I mean, okay. I know that we just had a full season closure, a full species closure, which was big. And even though we have had up to that date great sales, I don't know where fuel lines sit in that spectrum. So I guess you're still projecting, I don't have the numbers here, but still high sales, higher than before, and yet we have a market that is, I mean, yes, and so I know that the fuel, all that plays into account. So I guess I'm just a little hesitant or a little, not quite as optimistic with total sales recovery as being forecasted here.
I do know that Frank and Jim have kind of talked about that component, at least when we were analyzing the kind of projected hits to our revenues when we first started talking about these closures. So, Jim, do you have anything that you can share at this point? I don't want to put you on the spot, but to put you on the spot. Do you have anything to respond to Sherry with now, or do we need to kind of ponder that a bit?
I think we can to say answer your question. We'll maybe do both. So, putting together the sales tax and the projection, when I actually made the calculation, it projected sales tax of $8.5 million, and I discounted it 10%. So, if you look at it from those terms, I dropped $850,000 off of it after what the projection was to present to you. $7,650,000 for the sales tax. So that's one piece. And then the other piece on this particular slide that's up, it does show through the FY22 portion on the fuel sales impact on sales tax. We can see that the fuel vendors are having a smaller impact to the sales tax. So in that sense, when a fishery is reduced or closed altogether, we know there's going to be an impact. One, it's really difficult to project that. But the other side of that too is we're seeing that there's less of an impact on sales tax with respect to fuel. And I know that doesn't completely answer your question, but these are discussions that Frank and I have had and will continue to do so as we go forward. Off the top of my head, I don't know specifically what the impact may be. I know Frank and I talked about it. I want to say it's probably $200,000 to $300,000 on the sales tax side, but I don't have the numbers in front of me.
Okay, thank you, Councilman Coleman. Councilman Robinson got the answer over there.
I don't have the answer, but I mean, again, I think the correlation to increased sales tax is a direct correlation to the cost of goods. Also, a question I have is, do you have a number as to what the online sales tax has contributed or percentage roughly? And is that quite possibly a part of the increase in the other city sales tax vendors type deal?
I'm going to call on the clerk.
I don't have that information off the top of my
Jim,
Madam Clerk.
Yeah, Jim, Margie might have some.
Yeah, I don't have a summary or how much it's been growing, but it has been increasing each month. I believe the last report I looked at was between $17,000 and $18,000 for 1 month of revenue, which has increased steadily, since the inception of the Alaska Remote Seller Sales Tax Commission. I expect that will just keep going up as more vendors are brought into the fold. But I don't have a graph prepared for you or anything like that.
Right. I know with AML, they're increasing the number of vendors almost every month is a gradual increase as they reach out and notify other vendors. But I was just kind of wondering if that has what kind of percentage or is it insignificant to the large number, large growth in the sales tax, or that's what I'm looking at.
I wouldn't think that the remote seller sales tax commission revenue has a huge impact on that 27% increase.
Right, thanks. It brings me to a thought right at the beginning of this pandemic, how those people cleaned the shelves in the stores off of toilet paper.
Yeah.
Just cracks me up still.
And we have to remember, too, that some of the vendors that are now registered and paying through the Remote Sellers Commission were previously reporting to us directly. So it just kind of moved it from us receiving it directly to it going through the commission. So it's not all just gravy. Some of it we were getting previously.
Yeah.
If I may interject here, I was able to dig up some information here in what I have, and not that Amazon is the only supplier of goods and services online to the city of Unalaska, but I suspect they're probably the largest. And when I look at for 2021, the second and third quarter combined was $30,000. So if you extrapolate that out, it's $60,000 for Amazon over the course of a year.
Said not significant.
Great, thank you. Councilman Tungle?
Well, no, it's not. I mean, there's other online sellers, but they're probably going to be the largest.
I work in the fuel industry, so I think the increase in the barrel of the fuel make a big difference on gaining more taxes for this for the community. You know, every gallon, when you raise a price, it added not just that 3%. The price of fuel, you raise it up, it doubles up that 3% for a little amount of raising the price on the barrel. So that it play a big difference in making up some of those, closing up some of the season, not having some of this crab season, but having the tire price, I think it drives it up to make it up on those gallons, raising up the making up on the price that went up in there. So, and I don't see it going down anywhere sooner. So. I think the city will do good on taxes on fuel.
Mr. Mayor.
Hey, thank you. Erin?
Frank Kelty, our fisheries consultant, has something to say, too, because as you might remember, we did work closely with him on the revenue projections as they associated with fisheries, but also got his input on some of the sales tax stuff. So, Frank.
Yes, thank you, City Manager and Mayor and Council. I think Baum kind of took the wind out of my sail that I was going to talk to. But Baum, Councilmember Tundle, Councilmember Robinson, the price of fuel has gone up tremendously in the past year. I made some phone calls to see what the price was for number two diesel at the dock a month ago, and I was shocked. And I think the barrel of lube oil, Bond can correct me, but a barrel of lube oil was $1,500, something like that. It's just outrageous. So maybe it's higher than that. Maybe I got it wrong, Bond. But I think that is the driver. Even with the Bristol Bay red crab season, you've got maybe 30 boats or between 30 and 40 boats, and that season only lasts 2 weeks. So, the Ophelia season, there's, quite a bit of fuel because they would be running from the northern region back down, so they'd be buying a lot of fuel. So I think there's going to probably be impact, but I think the impact of less fuel sales has been overcome by the increase in price of fuel. So that's all I had to add. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Councilman Coleman?
Yes, but we know what's coming down the line. So I guess my point, I guess I was trying to make is, and I think Mr. Sharp said it when he was just looking at fuel cell or the price of a barrel, is that I hope we're looking at, obviously the price of the barrel is going to affect it, and the fact that it rebounded so high may be unexpected, but if we're looking at maybe using that 10-year average or whatever, you know, and looking at reduce usage. So I guess I just want to make sure that is all being, of course, considered, but, you know, expect less fuel use and maybe not depend on high prices to be driving force for sales revenues. Thank you.
No more questions here. We'll continue. Jim, thanks.
Okay, Margie, next slide, please. All right, the last three major revenue sources are all fish tax related. And so I'm starting off with the raw seafood tax or the local landing tax, as some folks call it. And currently, the rate that we collect is 2% of the shore value as reported by the process to the city on a monthly basis. So it's averaged almost 50% of our general fund revenue. And as you'll see on the graph, been fairly volatile over that time. It is really difficult to forecast what that's going to look like. And primarily because when we put these together, so it's January, obviously, and we're using allocations that were set last month for the 2022 fishing season for the fishery. But we're taking that information and for the first 6 months or the last 6 months of our fiscal year in 2023, are based off of information that at that point in time will be over a year old. So there's a lot of opportunities for that to change. And you can see from the graph here that that's what has happened. And so Frank and I worked together. We spent a lot of time on each of these fish taxes. And we used the allocations that were established. And we used it for the entire fiscal year. And that you will see there's a fairly substantial reduction. It's $800,000 reduction from last year. And Frank and I have been in fairly regular contact, just talking about the different fisheries and the impact and what may happen. And I don't foresee that changing. So what we have projected in here, you talked about several of these recently, you know, we've projected in the closure of the Red King crab, the reduction in the snow crab, and the reduction in the pollock. And some other factors, too, that are considered as part of this, when you think of the allocation, and that's certainly one component of what the shore value is and what they can catch, but the other component of that is the price. And what we've seen, and Frank can certainly speak to this much more intelligently than I can, but what we've seen and expect to continue to see is that, you know, the price that's being paid is going to, you know, you're going to see an uptick in that price. It's a supply and demand type item. And that's why the drop really isn't any more substantial than it is. But again, we'll continue to monitor this as the season goes on and see if, you know, anything changes, if any surveys come out that, you know, are both negative or positive. So we'll be in tune to those. So with that, for the seafood tax here, I'll open it up for questions and comments.
Any questions or comments? Councilman Luby?
So with the drop in the quotas, what you're saying is that because of supply and demand, that there's less fish, so then the price of the fish would be higher. And you're saying we would recover that loss from the amount of fish over
the... Not fully, no, but it does help a little bit. It's not certainly not going to fully make up for that, but there is an element of that that will benefit the city, and really in the sense that the loss won't be as significant because you'll see an uptick in the prices that the processors pay per pound.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Answers continue.
Okay. Next slide, Margie. So the state fish taxes, they're both 1.5%. They're based on different information in terms of the type of catch, and I'll probably defer to Frank on some of that. But the point I want to make out of the gate here is we can, particularly with this tax, we can project this tax with a fairly high degree of certainty, probably greater than any of the others that we've looked at tonight, in the sense that we can use the information that is provided to the city on a monthly basis by the processors for calendar year 2021. And using that information, we can then calculate what our payment, what the city will receive in FY23. So in other words, January through December 2021, that information will be used to determine what the state will provide to the city in October or November when that check is received. And talking about the reductions in the fisheries or the allocations, we won't see any of that with these two taxes in FY23. Again, because they're based on the 2021 fishery, we won't see the impact of that until fiscal year 24, when you'll see that the 2022 fishery will be reduced. So then we can expect the payment that we'll receive in October or November of 2023 to be much less than what we've seen historically. All right, so Margie, you can go to the next slide if you would like. And here's just a graphic representation. Sorry, one more back, please. Yes. So on this one here, and I'll pause and open it up for any questions or comments.
Any questions or comments? For all right. Seeing none, continue. Thank you.
Sure. Okay, so the last fishery tax, the state tax, again, 1.5%, based on a little bit different species than the business tax. And again, it's based on the calendar year. One of the big differences between this tax and the other tax is we don't have the information. We don't have access to this information. It's provided by the vessels to the state, and it's based on the published price book, the state published price book. And that... So we have that information, but the catch information is confidential. And I know that Frank has made several attempts to try to gain some of that information and has not been provided to him. And this one is challenging because when we go through our process of projecting out what that revenue is going to look like and then compare that to what we actually receive, there's a fairly significant gap. It's probably, I want to say 70 to 75% of what we project is what we actually receive. And we don't necessarily understand why that is. We can speculate for sure. But until that information is made public as to how that amount is calculated, well, we're still going to be left in the dark. So, Margie, if you could go on to the next slide, please. And this, again, shows the graphical history of less than 10 years for this particular tax. And with that, so I guess what I will comment on, you see that huge drop in 2016 and then that spike up again in 2017. And that's really due to a calculation error at the state level. They shorted us in FY16, recognized the mistake, made amends in 2017. For the most part, that's the most amount of volatility for sure. There really hasn't been much other than that. And so with that, I'll open up for questions, comments.
Councilman Robinson?
So, looking at our 2% raw fish tax, if that's any indicator of where taxes go, FY24 is going to see a reduction in our state portion of the raw fish taxes, or the fish taxes. So, it's just a matter of catching up. And that does have me concerned. And I'm, like I said, I'm really concerned about these folks that want to take a hatchet to the bycatch and kill us. So, anyway, thanks.
Okay, thank you. Any further comments, questions? There is none, so continue on, please.
Okay, Margie, proceed. This last slide here is really just to kind of give you a couple of snapshots in time in terms of, if you think back to the very beginning when I showed you that pie graph as to how our revenue has been divided up. This, again, is just a graphical representation. You've got snapshots from 2016 and 2021, and then you've got a 10-year average. And then you can compare, one, the 10-year average to those two snapshots, but also compare it to our budget. This is really more just for you to, I don't really have much to comment about it, other than it's, you can see it varies from year to year. But for the most part, it's been fairly straightforward throughout the last 10 years. And that concludes the presentation that I have. There were some tables and graphs that it came along with the memo, and if you have any questions about any of those or any other questions, feel free to ask them.
Yeah, we got Councilman Robinson.
Yeah, just a comment. I love the graph on the revenue percentages, but I feel for the folks that are colorblind.
Councilman, thank you. Councilman Luby?
Yeah, I just wanted to say thank you for all your hard work. I know what it's like to try to project revenues, and it's really hard to do. But I think you did a really great job you guys did a great job at analyzing different things, and I really enjoyed reading the packet, actually, of the memo and everything. It actually went into quite a bit of detail, so I appreciate that, and I understand it's really hard to project revenues. That's probably the hardest part of the budget. It's a lot easier to project expenses than it is.
I appreciate those comments, and I don't think I have it in the memo, but if I were to guess between my time and Frank's time and the city manager's time, I would suspect we probably got 60 hours of time in discussions and projecting and drafting memos and graphs and discussing all that. So it's really been, I think more so this year than in prior years, it's been much more challenging. For me, at the end of the day, I feel like I've got a much better grasp on the revenues and the projections going forward, and really a methodology by which to get there in future years as well.
Yeah, no, you guys did a really good job, and I thank you for that for sure. And I also noticed that, you guys did err on the side of caution, and, in every single aspect, you gave yourself a buffer zone. So that's really good, too, because it's always better to come in ahead than under on your revenues. So I just wanted to say thank you, and I can tell that you guys put a lot of work into it. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Councilman Coleman.
Thank you. I do want to just go back and circle around and touch briefly on investment revenues and how that plays in our budget, because I know from what I maybe misunderstood before is that, obviously we have money set aside for specific, you know, for those just in case portions, but the revenues or the money that we get make off of that, I guess I was under the impression that we never really count that as part of our budget because we're not in the business of making money, and so therefore we're not in the business of, you know, benefiting from monies that's sitting in the bank. So I guess I thought that that was never really considered because it does fluctuate, so we don't depend on that. So maybe that's just a conceptual thing. And then the second part of that, though, because now we've changed the way we've strategized on our money. Now we've got a significant amount that we've pulled out, and that money that we're going to start taking off the top will then now be fed back into our, as we determine, back into our budget. So now it does count. So now we can count it as part of our revenue. Maybe not this year or next year, but I guess so. That's so it's just added to the complexity for me, and how we count investment revenue in our budget.
So a couple of things, and Jim, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe historically we have included projected revenues from investment income in the budgeted projections. Is that correct? For the general fund.
That is correct. And what I will say, there's two components. When you look at investment income, there's two components. There's the interest or dividends. Those are the types of realized gain. Those are the money that you could spend, right, if you wanted to. I know our particular investment portfolio is set up a little bit differently, and we don't utilize those funds. But just thinking conceptually here, those dollars that you get an interest income or dividends or a realized gain, that's really money that you can spend. The other component of investment income is unrealized gains or losses. And that's really the fluctuation in the market value of whatever investment you may hold. Historically, we budgeted zero for the unrealized gain or loss. And the only item that we budgeted is the interest or dividend side, and it's really interest side. So that really is an amount that, while we don't typically, well, we haven't spent it, but it is something that we do incorporate into our budget. And there isn't anything to preclude the city from utilizing those dollars. We just have elected not to, frankly, because we haven't needed to.
I will say, thank you, Jim. I will say that as Jim notes in the memo, and as Councilmember Coleman has indicated, we are kind of shifting gears of how the city is, frankly, bucketing, you know, categorizing our existing funds and using those funds through investing. So that's partly why we didn't have this investment income as a major revenue source for discussion tonight, because we will need to have standalone discussions with APCM as we dig a lot further into the permanent fund and the emergency fund approaches and investment strategies associated with both of those categories and then we'll be able to kind of filter that into the budget process. But yeah, so to be continued on that one.
No, and thank you. I just remembered the caveat on that. So the realized versus basically our unrealized versus our, you know, interest. And thank you.
Okay, thank you, Councilman Robinson and Bell.
Yeah, thank you. The investment income, I can remember way back when that we were getting roughly, well, sometimes some years of like a $1.4 million in investment revenues. And then that changed. And that's the reason that I'd like to see this, what we're doing. And because it didn't need to change that drastically. We were too conservative on it. But overall, one of the things that does concern me a lot is the sales tax increase. Because I say, you know, and it's like I said, it's a direct correlation to the cost of goods. we're not, I mean, we got same population, we're not using a whole lot more than we have been, but those numbers are going to continue to go up. It's not often you can go to a, or, you know, you go to the store to buy a 4-pound prime rib and it's going to cost you $170. It's just, you know, the price of a 3-pound package of chicken has doubled in the past 3 months. We are going to see more of this. And the unfortunate part, I guess, is, or the fortunate part is we get some of that in sales tax. But I'm concerned of the public and how that's going to affect them. So.
Okay, thank you, Councilman Bell.
Yeah, I was just going to make a few comments here as wrapping this up. And you know, I don't necessarily agree with all the numbers that are in there, the way they're projected. I think the bottom line, when we look at a little over $30 million in projected revenues, I think that's close enough to the ballpark that gives us a good number to work on. You know, as we go through the budget process, we're going to have a lot more looking at this, and we start talking about proprietary funds and other stuff that all wrap into this. I'm sure we'll have some more spirited conversations about all this. So, thank you.
Yep, thank you. Councilman Luby? Oh, and Tungo.
Okay. So, and the only last thing I wanted to talk about was the proprietary funds, and I am looking at the last graph in the presentation here. And I think everybody has the same consensus here. It kind of sounds like we're all very concerned about the cost of living here for everybody, and the increase in the cost of living, the increase in flights getting out of here, and now we're going to be looking at increase in utilities. We have increase of property taxes, and this affects, you know, the businesses in town as well as our residents, and so. All of that plays a huge part as we go into the expense portion of the budget. And looking at this graph, you know, we're actually doing pretty good on our budgeted revenues. You know, we're pretty much, I was just looking at like the electricity, we're at 75% for this year at the end of, you know, December 31st. It seems like most of the other ones are up around, you know, just a little bit above 50%, except for ports in the airport, and those two are a little more concerning because they seem to be under revenues. And then with all of those, though, we're running at a negative budget instead of a balanced budget. So I'm hoping as we go through the rest of the process that we are going to end up with a balanced budget, and then we should be okay. So that was just the only comment I have on that, but I think that was about it. I am kind of curious of why ports and the airport is having a little harder time at keeping up. So maybe we can talk about that later when we get into that, but thank you.
Okay, thank you. Councilman Tungo?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I appreciate all the work that Jim and Frank did on this. I agree with Councilman Robinson about the prices going up. The supplies cannot make up for the demand that the people needed in this throughout the world. You know, everything, it's a supply shortage of supply than what the demand wanted by all the communities. So the prices ain't going to go down. So it's going to keep going up. And too bad for all the people that going to be spending more money and not making more. But it is going to be driven more higher with the demand being high and supply being short. So this won't stop for a while. I see the price is still going to go up. So I think they did a good job on this projection. We're still a little bit conservative on it, but at the same time, I think it's meeting what we need on our goals. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next, I've got Councilman Nicholson and then Coleman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I am in agreement with what Mr. Tungle and Dennis are saying about the prices of everything. The community is really going to suffer from this if, you know, and there's no way around it as far as all the high prices and taxes and stuff for supplies and stuff here. But I would like to thank everyone for putting on this presentation and stuff. It's very informative. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next, I've got Councilman Coleman.
Thank you. I don't have anything to add. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. We're wrapping it up here. I'd like to say, you know, a lot of effort and time went in by staff, city manager, city clerk, Jim and his crew, Frank, of course, a little bit of my time when I did sit down with you. But I think this process we're going through, we're going to have a lot more discussion as we start to get into, you know, down to the finalization and talking about proprietary funds. There will be a lot of questions on how we're going to deal with those that are, almost every one of them are negative, have been, and that's just the way we operate. It's unfortunate, but growing community does operate in the red. And we're going to level out at some point, but I think we're still ways to go. So I've had, and I want to thank you for the preparation and this presentation, Jim and your crew. Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Mayor and Council, thank you very much
for your
feedback tonight. I do really want to spend, I'm going to continue the trend of thank yous. I do want to extend a great sense of gratitude to Jim and Frank for all of their efforts in putting this together. And Council, it was really important for me to have that rationale and the methodology kind of spelled out for you. And so we can kind of really talk about where these numbers came from. Because that's important. It's not just, you know, guesses. There really was a strong methodology behind that. And so I think that shows. And so thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Any further comments from council? Okay, hearing none. Having completed all items on the agenda, this meeting is adjourned at 7:38 p.m. Thank you, everyone, and have a great evening. See you tomorrow night.